When you wrote Talking God and Amen, was there any talk about killing that song for yourself?
He was like, oh man, you ever get drunk and write a title down on your phone and you think it's a great idea? He was like, man, I was sitting around a fire with my friend the other night and we were drinking, looking up at the stars. We were talking about like beyond, what's beyond the universe and all this stuff. And he said, I wrote down, sitting here, we're drinking beer, talking about God. Amen.
Dodds is on the podcast. We've been trying to make this happen.
Thank you guys. Thank you.
We've been trying. That's the in-studio audience.
Yeah.
We've been trying to do this for years.
And we're here.
And we're here.
It was supposed to happen today.
Kale, give me a moment in your Nashville career that still gives you chills when you think back on it.
Seeing Chris Stapleton at the Ryman. And then when I left the Ryman, I was with my guitar player, and on the way home, I heard a song on the radio that I wrote for the first time.
So, really?
So two chilling moments within like 30 minutes of each other, yeah.
Did Chris Stapleton actually enhance hearing the song on the radio somehow?
No connection. I just happened to be leaving at the same time I heard it for the first time.
And you heard it where, in a cab?
Well, I was driving. I was driving. My guitar player was with me. And I was like, I can't believe this moment is happening right now.
Were you secretly listening to the radio because you knew there was a chance it was going to come on? Or
I kind of always hit scan, which is super annoying to a lot of people. But I always hit scan just to see like where I want to stop the radio if I don't know what to listen to. But no, I mean, full transparency, I was listening in hopes that I could hear it because I knew that there was a chance.
It was
I
added. Could. You knew that it was added to whatever station.
It was my first single to radio. Not mine, but one I wrote with the 1,000 Horses single. So.
Oh, I
Drunk Dial.
Drunk Dial.
Yeah. And I heard it for the first time after leaving the Ryman, which was, I think, my first time being at the Ryman, too, which is crazy. Maybe not. But it was my first like show there. So
really?
Yeah. It was awesome.
That's a great story, actually.
It was fun.
How young were you when that came out?
I don't know, this is maybe 2016, so what am I now? I don't know, I was like maybe, I was around 25 or 26, yeah. I'm bad at math. Don't ask me any math questions, please. We'll edit all that out.
We'll edit all the math out. How much did you think that song was gonna change your life and did live up to expectations, or did getting a song on the radio not live up to the career expectations that you thought it would the first time around?
No, it did. I was living in a garage at the time when it went to radio, so it got me out of the garage. So it definitely...
How does it get you out of the garage? Because then you signed a publishing deal.
A publishing deal. I saw, you know, obviously a little money from that song. I owned my publishing on that song because so, I signed a deal. Or I didn't have a publishing deal at the time. So I signed a publishing deal after that song. So yeah, it changed my whole life. I mean, I was able to get different co-writes. I got obviously a great a publishing deal after that and was able to get into a place outside of a garage that actually had, you know, running water.
Did you have to sign over the publishing for that song?
No, just admin.
Just admin. So you still own the publishing for that?
My part of it, yeah. I mean, it was a four-way song.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that do you still see checks from that? I feel like that song must still get...
Not like you would think, but I mean, we're talking almost 10 years ago, right? So
Yeah.
And it got to like 20, I think. So, I mean, it wasn't a number one song, but I mean, it still, it did well, but I'm very grateful for it. I mean, don't get me wrong. That song absolutely changed a lot of things for me.
Why'd you turn down the first publishing deal that you got when you came to town? You were offered a deal and you turned it down. Why'd you turn it down?
It didn't feel right.
How'd you have the confidence to do that?
Man, one of the biggest things that I learned when I moved to town that I heard over and over again, and I still believe in it to this day, and I've learned it the hard way, which has also served me very well, is trust your gut. And I know it sounds cliche, but even at a time, like I said, when I was, you know, living in a garage, any kind of publishing draw would have been great. You know, I was gigging and writing songs during the day, gigging on the weekends. And, you know, it didn't feel right. So it's as simple as that. I was like, this doesn't feel like it should.
Was it the quality of the contract or was it the people that you would have been working with that you thought maybe wouldn't have been the best for what you were trying to do?
A little bit of both. I feel confident based off the conversations that were had when I was turning it down that it could have gotten better. A lot better.
What do you mean? Like you couldn't negotiate a better deal?
Yeah. But again, even in that moment, I was like, well, now this definitely doesn't feel right because it was just kind of like just went sideways. And I'm very glad because I stuck to what my gut was telling me, which was it's not right. And I'm grateful that happened, because that led to, you know, every stepping stone that I had along the way to come after that, which would have never happened if I were locked into a deal.
Wait, so then when you finally did sign the deal, why was that the right deal?
A couple of reasons. The team involved, what it led to, the people around me, the rights that I was able to get that I weren't able to get beforehand, kind of the circle.
But
that
do you know you were going to get that before you signed the deal?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
So you kind of but it felt like the right deal because it just felt like the right people were involved.
Yeah. Rolled
and
the dice.
Why does that get you out of the garage? Because then you get draws or you get advances every week. And yeah. That was enough to get you out of the garage.
Because I had never been paid to write songs at that point.
Yeah.
So I was like literally living, it was like $300 a month cash.
No, that's all it was?
Oh, dude, it was. But it,
and
it,
that was enough to get you out of the garage?
Yeah.
Was $300 a month?
No, I'm saying I was able to get into a nicer place because that's all I could afford at the time, because I was gigging. Yeah. I was paying my band. I was you know, one of three at the time. So, you know, I'm losing
with
money.
Who were you out with at that time?
I mean, name like, it. Like, it wasn't like a steady tour. It was just like opening for like Billy Currington.
Like the local spot.
No, I mean, me or whatever. This is back when Sam Hunt was also in a van and we were touring vans. So,
do you have
like,
an agent or no?
I had just either just before or just signed a CAA. So I was like doing like bar gigs on my own and then like doing like one-offs with like Sam Hunt or Billy Currington or Brett Eldridge at the time. It was like right after his first single, David Nail. And we're talking like 2014, 15 era. So 13 on some of those. So I moved to town in 2011. So it was an interesting time.
Dude, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wait, so you're a big Springsteen fan, right?
Die hard. Well, I say die hard.
How did you become a Springsteen fan?
Man, I always believe, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but like...
Who's we? You and me?
Yeah.
We have?
Yeah. Okay. And I actually remember where.
Okay.
Outside of Marathon, was it before... Was it the post show? We both at the post show?
For what?
The Post Malone show?
I wasn't there.
Okay.
You're thinking of another white guy.
No, there's only...
We all look the same.
There's only one Zach. It'll come to me. But I know we talked
young
about
CA
this.
Event. I know I ran to you at the Young CA event.
That's what it is.
That was years ago.
Okay.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think artists come to people at the time they're supposed to.
I actually do remember talking about this.
There we go. Yeah. Thank you. But Springsteen specifically, I feel like you can be like a fan of, but like to really like get immersed in his catalog and like his whole thing, I feel like has to be at the right time. Like, so for example, like as a songwriter, because I've been writing songs since I was like 12, I've always respected and been like, oh my gosh, Bruce, you know what I mean? But as you get older and you really start like diving into the catalog, you're like, I don't know, it's just more he comes to you at the time. I feel like you're supposed to have him and understand his whole thing. And yeah, I've always been a fan, but it was probably around 2007, 8, 9 on in that era, especially as I was like driving around the country in a van full time touring, that, you know, you put on these records and you just kind of get lost in them and you pick up something you didn't hear the first time around, kind of thing. But yeah, he's the best, man. He's the GOAT.
So. Who are the front men that you've taken antics from directly that you incorporate in your own live show? Like, is Springsteen, like, is there anything Springsteen does that you pull directly into your own live set, or are there other people?
Yeah,
that
I'd say
pull
so.
Stuff
I mean,
in?
We're all like a conglomerate of the things that we love and saw growing up, you know, stylistically, I would say. So yeah, Bruce, for sure. He has a great way of, one thing I appreciate about him is regardless of how serious the connotation of the song is or not, he makes sure there's entertainment or some kind of humor or quality in between songs, whether it's his banter with, you know, Stevie, or like, you know, introducing the E Street Band or whatever. There's always just like an element of entertainment and quality of some kind of laughter or something in between there. So he always is keeping some kind of dialogue with the crowd. And I appreciate that, because to me, guys like that, guys like Butch Walker, who's one of my favorites as well. He's great. Super entertaining in between songs as well as during obviously the song. And so there's an element of that to me of, which there's nothing wrong with going out there and just playing your hits and doing the thing, but like a show to me that has always been like up here, like the upper echelon of a show, are the guys who bring it with their band and the songs, obviously, but it's the in-between. Like Matt Nathanson. I don't know if you've ever seen him live, but like
I've never seen him live. What does he do?
It's a comedy show. I mean, he, and that's not to say you have to be funny in between songs every song, but like Matt could just go on tour and just talk. And he's kind of an outlier because he's just that funny. But like he cares about the in between as much as he does the actual song, and I appreciate that a lot because those are always the shows to me that have like stuck out, you know.
So do you, when you're playing, how scripted is everything that you're gonna say between songs, or do you just think in your head, be entertaining, and you try to pull something out in between everything?
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say that there were a couple things that I, you know, tried to hold on to use if. Like if I introduced a song and I told like a story that I didn't think was going to be necessarily funny, I was just trying to be informative about the story and maybe it got a laugh. I'll go, okay, I need to remember that and tell that way and make it better the next night for sure. Cause I think those are the moments that, you know, you can only know those things and find those things by trying them live. So yeah, I would say there are definitely some things that I hold on to and try to refine and maybe tell in a newer way, each night. But no, it's not as not as scripted as maybe some things we've seen. But I definitely try to make sure there is something in between, just so you're not like, well, this next song's called, you know, like,
isn't that the worst?
Yeah, it is.
You see that all the time. It's moments like that where I go, I could be an artist if only I could sing. I could be an artist because I would kill those in between moments.
Yeah.
I just can't
sing. You would kill those.
That would be my thing.
Well, it's also like you could be good at this, though. I mean, remember when like when Fall Out Boy, even in their heyday, in between songs, it was usually Pete Wentz talking.
That always weirded me out.
Well, it's kind of weird, but also like if Pat wasn't comfortable doing it, it's like, well, Pete's got the personality.
Is Pete the front man of the band?
I mean, he's kind of the brainchild behind it.
He's totally
it all.
The face of it. Like yeah. When I think about it. When I think about the band, when I think about Fall Out Boy, I think about him.
So you should have a country band and the lead singer sing and you rip on the guitar and talk in
between.
Can
I tell you
songs?
Something, though? My dream is to start a band. Every time I see Old Dominion, I just saw Old Dominion at like a charity event a couple weeks ago. I was like, I got to get into a band.
Dude, you would
be. Can we start a band? What do we? How would we do this?
Let's do it.
How would I do this? I don't normally talk about myself, but
the talent's already there. You're already a better guitar player than half of the guys I know.
I don't know about that, but like, how would you start a band in country music? I feel like it needs to happen.
I mean, Old Dominion's done it. Midland's done it.
Rascal Flatts.
Rascal Flatts. I mean, it can be done.
Okay, back to Kale. Kale, when you were in high school, you had a band teacher.
Oh, God.
Who desperately tried to get you to join the jazz band to play bass. He begged you.
You did your work here.
He begged you to join the jazz. You didn't even want to do it. Finally, he gets you into the band. And then he yells at you because you don't know how to read music.
Yeah.
And he says you're never going to make it as a professional musician because you can't read music. Does that still piss you off when you think back on that guy?
It used to piss me off. It just fuels me now.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, he told me I literally would never have a career in music if I couldn't read jazz music. And he didn't even figure it out until halfway through the semester because I was just playing by ear, playing along with everybody. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm at home listening to Blink-182 and Springsteen, you know, and trying to write songs with my little rock band. And I was just told that I could play bass during school. And I was like, yeah, of course I want to do that. And anyways, I committed to doing it. And when he realized what was going on here, he said I either learn to read it or, you know, get out because I would never learn how to read it. And I was like, and the rest of the class, the other part of the story is the rest of the class was so far advanced, there was just no chance in me learning and starting from zero to read.
Yeah.
I feel like
bass is easy, though. How hard could it be to read some bass?
I agree with you, but he basically was like, you're done. Get out. And I was like, all right. And he said I'd never have a career in music. And so,
but were you trying to have a career? Like, did he know that you were trying to have a career
in
music?
Oh, absolutely. He said, well, what is your goal anyways? I said, I want to be the biggest artist I can be and write songs and perform. And he was like, that's never going to happen if you don't do this.
Yeah.
And at the time it made me so mad, but you know, I kind of had that chip on the shoulder kind of punk rock mentality as a freshman in high school, you know, in this room with all these, you know, juniors and seniors. And, yeah, it was just like, I was like, I'll show you. And I can't wait till I give my Grammy speech, because I'm going to absolutely thank him for that motivation.
But do you think that maybe he was actually trying to help you out? Like, maybe his intentions were, I want to scare this guy because I think he should learn how to read music and I want to try to get him there. Or was that not the attitude he was putting out?
Knowing the guy, I don't think that was his goal.
Yeah. What it was, I can't even get into it.
It just wasn't very kind. And I think he obviously wanted me to learn, but he was just basically, you know, like, no.
This. Did any part of you think that maybe you should learn music? Did you ever try?
I did, but again, everybody was so advanced in that class.
It just didn't feel like, what am I going to do with
it
this?
It was just like, it'd be like skill. Dropping you into like, you know, level 4 French. As a guy who's never had French, and there, he's saying you literally have, you know, a couple weeks to get as advanced as everybody else. It's just not going to happen.
I failed my French class in
high school.
Well,
there it is.
It was the only class I failed in high school, yeah.
Do you remember anything from it?
Like, basic things. But you know what actually happened? The teacher came to me and said, look, if you drop the class now, I can put it as a drop pass.
Okay.
But if you keep going, you will fail this class.
So this is what happened with the band. The
really?
Band guy. So basically I had to drop out and get into pretty much weightlifting with the football players, which was also equivalent to me being in level 4 French as a guy. You know,
but were you judged against the football players in that setting? You were probably not.
More accepted than I was in the band class, even though they were like, why are you in here? And I like had a couple friends that I had, you know, just known who also, they would come to the shows that I was putting on the weekend. So there I was accepted, but by no means was I, you know, running drills with them and stuff. Yeah. I would go write lyrics in the corner.
So your band leader is totally bagging on you. Where did you get the confidence to think that you actually would be able to pursue a career in music and that you actually were talented?
Man, I just think it was probably just the little wins along the way, you know? I mean, we were old school, man, and we would put up flyers and, you know, go we'd play garage parties, and this is like, we're talking freshman year of high school. So it was like, from there, it was like, all right, well, people are showing up here. Let's try this. Let's go out. Let's try playing some local bars. And then it was the college circuit, and we just kept doing it. And it was like, man, this is the move. Like, and we had, it didn't come from a musical family. My brother played drums with me, but mom and dad weren't musical. They were just like supportive of us playing music, and they loved it, and they loved music. So they were just like, yeah, whatever we can do to support. So yeah, there was just little victories along the way, and just the continuation of like exploring what is this burning inside that we're trying to find here. And it just all led back to getting in the van and going to play gigs and writing more songs, which led to Nashville.
Were you playing college shows while you were still in high school?
I was a sophomore in high school when I started playing the college circuit.
Oh my God.
I mean, I think I still had braces the first time I was in a bar playing.
Do you think you were like, did the college kids think you were cool? Like, were you able to go and interact with like college girls while you were in high school? Was there a separation?
There was a separation at first for sure. Especially when the braces were on, but once the braces were off,
then
it was game on.
I can't believe though, this guy, you had this college professor that you were in college in Columbus, Georgia, right? Is that where'd you go to school?
Columbus, Georgia, Columbus State University.
Columbus State University, and you had this professor that you went in because you had to go. He was like your advisor.
Oh man!
And you had to go pick new classes.
Yeah.
And he says to you, "What are you doing here?"
Yeah.
He says, "You gotta get out." He told you to. What did he tell you? He told you to drop out.
It did. I had it was my last year of college, and I had 2 or 3. Capstone courses to graduate, meaning like you just had to take these 3 courses to graduate. And I was on an academic scholarship, and it was basically like if I could keep that academic scholarship, I would be able to use the money that was saved for college to help move me to Nashville. And so I was like doing everything I can to like maintain a certain grade point average, you know, studying in the back of the van, you know. Long story short, I went to his office because he goes, hey, can I do your advising? And he wasn't my advisor. He could do it, but he wasn't my assigned advisor.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, great. And he was just really cool, kind of a younger guy. And I sat down with him. He goes, all right, man, you're done.
No, said, that's what he said.
He said, you're done. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you're done. He said, great work. You're done. And I said, well, I've got 3 capstone courses to graduate. He goes, you're wasting your time and you're wasting mine. Go to Nashville, follow your dream. College will always be here. Don't wait. And I was like,
was that good advice?
I mean,
couldn't you have just finish those classes and then come to Nashville?
That's what my dad still says to this day.
Did you ever go to Belmont or no?
No.
So you never got your college degree.
I never got my college
degree.
And
your dad still says that to this day?
Still to this day, he'll say, you know, you could still get that piece of paper. I'm like, for what? For what?
Wait, I can't believe, is this true? On the first gig you ever played, what'd you get paid, like $100?
Maybe.
And your dad took out the gas money, and he took out, is that true?
He did, but he was doing it to teach us a lesson.
I don't know, though, because I feel like, don't you think it's great to have a little bit of money and then you can figure out what to do with the money and
for
save
sure,
it?
For sure, but I'll never forget that lesson because it was like four of us in a band and we get $100 yeah. and we go, great, 25, 25, 25, 25. And my dad was like, no, because again, we're young. We literally can't drive. My parents pulled a trailer and drove us to the gig.
Yeah.
And it was a great lesson for all of us because he goes, y'all made $100. It took 50 in gas to get here. He was like, you guys also ate, so here's another 30, you know, and he just did the whole thing, taxes, and we were like, oh, man, we got a long way to go here. But I'm so grateful for that. And don't get me wrong, he gave us the money afterwards.
Boy, he just showed.
He just showed, hey, this is not reality. This is reality. If you want to make a living doing this, you have to remember this is reality. And we all just sat there like, oh, we need to make more money doing this before we actually make money.
Right. Wait, so your teacher tells you, this advisor tells you, he says you're done.
Yeah.
And he says, go to Nashville. And how quickly after that did you end up moving to Nashville? Did you go, thank God, you go, yes, this is what I've been waiting for in my life. This is a sign. Is that what you thought? Or did you think, this is insane. I can't
I definitely
do this.
Thought it was insane. But it was probably 6 years. No. Yeah, 6 years, 7 years after he told me no, that it couldn't happen.
Wait, it took you 7 years to move to Nashville?
No. Sorry, when my teacher told me no,
yeah.
that I would never write songs for a living or whatever.
Oh, no, I'm talking about this advisor. When the advisor
says,
hey, you're done, move to Nashville, drop out of college. How long?
4 months. I started looking that day for because I thought I had to go to a whole other semester, which I technically did.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, during that semester, I'm going to start looking for places to stay up here. I think that day I started looking for places up here because I knew that I wasn't coming back the next semester. So I went home that day, told my parents, they were not stoked. And I started making phone calls just to anybody and everyone I knew that even lived close to Nashville if I could like rent a room or something, you know what I mean? So
see, okay, I wanted to drop out of music school so badly.
Yeah.
But my parents, not that they could have had any real control over me, but they wouldn't let me. And they said, just graduate, and then you can do whatever you want with the rest of your life, but just graduate. And they are the reason I graduate. If they had said drop out or whatever, I would have dropped out. I wanted to.
Yeah.
Why did you have the confidence to go against your parents? Because I didn't have that confidence.
Well, I think the thing I had going for me is literally that the college, the guy that was doing my advising is the one that
But
said,
I feel like at Berkeley, I went to Berkeley, those people drop out of Berkeley all the time, become way more successful.
True.
But the guy, that's what it was. Did you say that to your parents? You said, look, the college is telling me I
gotta
get out.
Yeah, that was my get out of jail free card right there. I was like, literally my professor is saying quit wasting his time.
And what does he know, though? I mean, why would he be so smart?
I think because there was a whole thing where he put his dream on hold to do other things, and he wishes he didn't. And so I also had that going for me. And it was a great kind of story. But they said, hey, well, go give it hell. And college will always be there. So I'm still giving it hell, man.
Okay, you have released music in the major label system and somewhat independently, but with like major distributors. What are the tips to navigating independent releases and releases in the major label system?
Man. Where do we start?
Start with the major label system. When you're in the major label system, what are the tips to not get lost in these massive ecosystems and to really release music in a productive way?
This is tough. I'll do my best here because I got signed to a major because I was releasing music that I believed in and that I thought was different and I thought was just on the edge and was getting, you know, the reaction was great and all the things. I had great streaming numbers. I had they say a story. I know it sounds cliche, but I had a story. But as far as like the song selection, it was kind of it started with me, obviously, but like it was a small group of just opinions that I was like playing stuff for, going, how are we feeling about this? And at the end of the day, me saying, but I believe in these five for an EP or whatever. When you get into the major label system, there's no longer five opinions. There's like 35 opinions. And, you know, especially at that time when there, you know, TikTok wasn't like, I don't even know if it was actually a thing yet, but, you know, I got signed for these songs, if you will. And then when it came time to go to radio, they wanted to play it a little safer, like start with a safer single. And that's not to bash the label. It's just, you know, they wanted to do something a little safer and then go back to these.
How'd they define as safer? Was did sound more commercial or did sound more in line with what else was on the radio
right.
at the time? Is that what made it safe?
Yeah. And I was like, and my argument, and I still stand by it, is, well, you signed me for doing this thing. And what's working that we know, hard numbers, streaming, all the things, are these songs. So why would we change anything? And even when I went to radio with this batch of songs plus the safe one, they were like, the safe one's great, but what about these five? And I was like, yeah, I know. And I'd go back to label and be like, they want one of these. And they're like, but we got to play it safe first.
How do these types of decisions happen? Like, how do you rationalize it? Is it it's group thinking? Like, one person says an idea and then everyone gets behind it and then it's hard to change the machine's mind? Or, like,
still blows my mind.
How do you think these things happen?
I don't know, because especially when you have all the people, like from the people on my radio team to me to the PDs to everything, saying, like, hey, here's our feedback. Like, this one's good, but these are great. Like, how do you ignore that? And I still don't know. Like, why would you not go with one of those if the radio is saying, but we love those, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I did my best. I never went with anything that I felt like was like off brand or wasn't me. So at the end of the day, I wanted to rest on that. But I definitely, you know, the thing that I believed in the most was the thing that got me signed. And, you know, I never went with anything that I felt like was not part of, you know, the package of what I was trying to, you know, put out or sound like or be authentic with. It's just there was a certain group that were the ones that I was like, these are me.
Those songs were kind of like, they had like a, almost like a punk rock edge to them.
Oh,
did they
thank
a little
you.
Bit, or they had, even not punk rock, like early 2000s rock kind of stuff.
Yeah, I
right?
mean, like, I, you know, there's definitely an influence in there from all of that, because, I mean, like I said, I grew up on a lot of that stuff, and it's funny that it's making a comeback now, but, you know, when you're young, you listen to whatever you want to, and you kind of reject what your parents listen to, and so my dad was a big country guy, my mom was a big top 40s person, you know, and so for me and my brother, it was like, you know, in middle school, like Blink-182, but then, you know, it was like, all right, what am I going to do that is me, but... And I've always loved the country and top 40, but you don't want to like it because your parents like it at the time.
Yeah.
Especially as I started really writing songs, though, it's like, man, the stories in country and like the lifestyle, just the theme of a country song is something I could play at 20 or 60. You know what I mean? And so there's just this thing there, this like longevity, this timeless like feel of a well-crafted lyric that to me always is what like... is the interweaving of a lifestyle song and country that I've always kind of gravitated towards.
When you look back though on that, do you think there was someone that you, hindsight's always 20/20, but is there someone that you should have gone to their office and just slapped them straight across the face and said, we're putting out one of these five songs and then walked out? Should something like that have happened, or was it impossible? Nothing you could have done would have affected it?
It's not that I never thought about that. But what I kept going back to was, okay, these people have had the success that they've had based off of making decisions like this.
Yeah, you want to trust them, right?
You want to trust them.
Yeah, and you owe them that, right? Because they're taking a big shot on
you. For sure.
Did you get a big first advance that then got you out of that apartment after the garage into your next place?
No, I took better deal points than I did like this massive advance.
That's always the move, right? That's always
I think so.
So then now, so when you release music independently, then nobody tells you what to do then, right? Then
well,
or does anyone tell you what to do?
That's kind of the beauty of it right now. That's why I've enjoyed going back to releasing music again, because I kind of have that same feeling I had before signing to the majors, which was, what do I love? What do I want to put out? What feels good right now? And man, that's an awesome place to be in, because I went through majority of COVID coming off of, because I was still on the major label when I during COVID, and you know, like all of us, our hands were kind of tied not, you know, we were going, what are we going to do? Because we can't tour. It's like, well, we can release music. And then the labels were saying, well, we can't release music yet. We don't know how long this thing's going to last. And I was like, okay, if I can't tour and I can't release music, what are we going to do? I was like, well, just wait. And it's like, well, I can't wait. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That's always the major label.
Yeah.
I prior to the pandemic, I used to promote all these shows. And I would try to book artists, and these artists would say, no, we're waiting. And then the pandemic would happen. And then it was like, okay, well, what did waiting do for you? You could have played the show and then still waited.
Right.
Like, it's never the right move to wait.
Yeah, right? I agree. So to answer your question, it feels great to be in a place again where if I have something that I want to put out, you know, and I've if it's something I feel like is cuttable or I want to pitch around and it's not cut, whatever the case, or I'm just ready to release, then I can do it. So that's an awesome place to be in. And I feel like the world is different now since pandemic. And I feel like it's a better time than ever to be independent. And that's no slight to the labels. It's just there's so much within your control now more than ever with the opportunities and possibilities with these things. It's like I'm holding up my iPhone for anyone listening to audio. It's a good place to be in, but it's also comes with its complications of a slave to the algorithm and all the things. But when it comes to just releasing music, yes, that it's an awesome place to be in.
When you write this song, Calling You, mm-hmm. and you bring this home to your, are you married yet?
I'm engaged still.
You're engaged. Yeah. When you bring this song home to your fiance, does she go, who is this about? Who are you talking about here?
No.
Is that the conversation?
That's a great question. And it's funny. The day that I released that song, our mutual friend, Mr. Jeremy, texted me and was like, great song, man. Very bold move as a guy who's planning a wedding right now.
I can't be the only one thinking this.
No. But to answer your question, we kind of had the conversation a long time ago when we started dating of, hey, look, not every song that I write is going to be a love song.
I know, but it still has to make you think, why are these ideas? And where is he getting these ideas from? They have to come from somewhere.
You got
to
pull from your well, you know?
Just because you say that. Is it about a past relationship, or is this a totally made-up concept that you just had?
I wouldn't say it's totally made up. I think I have found, and this is to answer your question, I've found the things that work best for me, whether it's somebody has cut it or it's a well-streamed song for me or whatever, are the lyrics and are the moments when I am pulling from something either very specific to my life or an actual detail, even if I change the detail a little bit. So I'd be lying if I didn't say I was pulling from the well of experience in the past to craft that lyric. But at the same time, there were some things changed, and with my co-writers as well, throwing a little bit of their past in there as well. So, which is the beauty of co-writing, obviously, but yeah, no, I've kind of looked at it as like, I'm looking at like, cause I'm releasing singles and each of them feel like a yearbook picture to me right now. And it's kind of like,
in what way?
You know, like that's where I was at that time.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And as much as, you know, you and I were talking about albums before we started, and it's like, I love the thought of like a 12 song record that you can just put on start to finish. And that's like, it's a body of work. You can read the liner notes and all the things, but that's also kind of not where we are today. And I realize that, and I feel like I'm looking at singles right now as a yearbook picture of just, this is where I am right now in this time. This is where I am right now in this time. And sometimes you look back and you go, I wish maybe I should have worn a different shirt that day or that haircut. Maybe before there wasn't the right time for that one. But right now, I'm happy to be able to select the shirt and the haircut and whatever myself versus 30 other opinions to be able to release these songs. So
when you wrote Talking God, Amen, mm-hmm. which Chase Rice cut, Flora George Line featured on, big song. Did that go number one or no?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Was there any talk about cutting that song for yourself? Or because Chase was a writer on it, did he have to cut the song?
That was one of those rare moments where immediately when we got done with the song, Chase was like, I'm cutting this.
And then you go, fuck.
No, I was very excited.
Really?
Yeah, because because that was the last day of that tour. And it was the last write we were going to have for, you know, that tour, obviously. And who knew how long it'd be till we wrote again. And I had been working hard on coming up with hooks, ideas, titles, whatever, for this last specific weekend. because I knew we were going to have Corey Crowder out with us and Hunter was going to be out with us. And I had had a bus, which I wasn't supposed to have a bus. I'll get back to that. But, and I knew that this was our last chance at writing what was potentially going to be his next single. So I was throwing everything at the wall and I was putting the time in to prepare and everything. So the goal was to write the next Chase Rice single that day. So I was absolutely not mad when he said he was going to do it.
What, who threw that hook out? How did that hook?
That's actually a great story because I spent a lot of time working on ideas, like I said, for that write. Fun fact number one about that day is, Chase is a big soccer fan, or football, excuse me. He's a big Man City guy.
Yeah.
And I remember...
You don't have to apologize to me. I don't skin the game.
I always say soccer or football.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it's also confusing because he was a football player when you say football. Anyways, we're in the back of the bus. Again, it was the last weekend of the tour. We're in the back of my bus, me, Corey Crowder, Hunter Phelps, getting ready to write. And the Man City game just started. And I remember being like, where is Chase? Like, why is he not, you know, coming over on the bus? And I remember Hunter saying, good luck getting him to come right with that game on. And I was like, and I looked up and we had like an SEC football game on. I think it was like Georgia. And I was like, okay, I can fix that. I literally get the remote and I change it to the Man City game and take a picture of my TV and send it to Chase. I went, ready to write when you are, man. Got the game on. I hit send. And I'm not kidding, 30 seconds later, he was on our bus. He just wanted to know we could also watch the game.
That is so smart.
I mean, but I didn't know that was the reason he wasn't coming over. He wanted to watch the beginning of the game and then come over. I was like, we can watch the whole game and then my back lounge.
Do you send that text because you go, listen, I got one more day to have a shot of writing a single for Chase Rice. There's a lot on the line here.
100%.
He's got to get in. Is there some attitude in that text? Like, Chase... wasting all of our time.
I was like, you're about to miss out on this because we're going to write something. We're going to write something great. So come on.
So he comes over comes in.
And
you're this song. Now when you listen to this song, you can picture that game was playing in the background.
Absolutely.
As they were writing the whole time.
Absolutely.
And then who throws the hook out? You had all these ideas. Any of the ideas that you were coming up with, did they end up on the song?
He liked almost every idea that I threw out. But... he wasn't like diving on the ball. He wasn't like, man, but that's the one I want to write today. You know, it never had the like goosebumps moment. He wanted to write a very specific song. Chase is a great writer. He also knows like what he's looking for when you're writing. And it could be a hit idea. It could be whatever idea, but if he's not like in the mindset or like looking to write that thing, then he's not going to commit to writing it, which I get and I respect, but we were all throwing stuff out. Corey kind of had a little loop going. And I'm like at the end of my list here, and I'm like, oh, we're gonna end this tour not having had written a song on the last day. And I've put all this pressure on it and had all these ideas. And Chase was like, well, let me see what I got in my phone. And he starts thumbing through. He's kind of watching the game. I'm looking at Corey and Hunter like, guys, could somebody throw something out? Because he's also the kind of writer that like if you don't get on it, like he's kind of out. Like if there's not something happening pretty
he's
quick,
he's gonna go back to the game.
He's probably gonna go back to the game, or you know, go eat, whatever the case. Anyways, he just kind of starts laughing at one point, just kind of to himself, and kept scrolling. I was like, "What's so funny, man?" You know. He was like, "Oh man, you ever like get drunk and write a title down on your phone, and you think it's a great idea, and then like you look back at it weeks later, and you're like." That was dumb. I was like, yeah, like weekly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what was the title? He was like, man, I was sitting around a fire with my friend the other night and we were drinking, looking up at the stars. And he was like, we were talking about like beyond, what's beyond the universe and all this stuff. And he said, I wrote down, sitting here, we're drinking beer, talking about God. Amen. And I like looked at Corey and Hunter and I was like, what is that? And Chase was like, I don't know, funny, right? And he kept scrolling. I was like, yeah, funny, but like also like go back to that. He's like, well, I just said sitting here drinking beer, talking about God. Amen. And Corey, the loop was going. Corey just kind of hummed the beginning, sitting here drinking beer. I was like, what? Yes, that's what we're doing, right?
Do you think that hook would have gone unnoticed if you hadn't pointed out? Were you the first one to point out and say, that's a, well, hold on.
Yeah, well, I was just like, what are you laughing at? And he, that's when he said it. And I was like, yeah, no, that's great.
Why is that a great hook?
Because it's just kind of, it's kind of polarizing because it has, I'm saying it's polarizing, but it kind of stops you because you go, it says beer, it says God, it says amen. It's like three things you don't really hear a lot together. And I don't know. It's not that I think it's genius. It's just like it's different. You know what I mean? And the way, I think the way that it fit, like that title, the way it fit and saying over the track we had and just, I don't know, the timing and everything of it, it just kind of felt like it was very relatable. It's kind of got this thing to it. It's got very, it's a very specific, like detailed lyric, firewood crackle in the fall air. Like it's like a very detailed lyric over like a fun kind of life song. It's got God in there. It's got beers. It's got all the country elements. So I just think we tried to craft what we felt like was what was needed to be a servant to the song, you know, and serve the purpose of what we felt like it was being asked to be written.
At what point did FGL get on the track?
So this is what's funny. This is fun fact number two about this. This is why.
And then we got to get to the bus, how you got the bus.
Oh, yeah. That's fun fact number three.
I'm tracking.
This is good. True story. When we got done writing that song, we immediately started demoing it in the back of the bus. And when we got done, Chase sang the vocal, and then we realized we wanted to do gang vocals on the last chorus. So get a mic, set it in the center of the bus, Corey cranks it up, and we all four of us, sing gang vocals on the last chorus. Well, while we were singing those gang vocals, Chase gets his phone and does a selfie-styled kind of video, if you will, and just posted it on Instagram. And it just said something like, wrote a smash with the boys today before the show kind of thing. He throws it up on his story, and we do one more take of gang vocals, and he walks off to eat lunch. And then Hunter leaves. So it's just me and Corey sitting there. Chase comes back before Chase left, BK from FGL, BK hit him back on his DMs because he had just posted on a story and said, sounds like a hit to me, brother. And then Chase left for lunch. And then Hunter left. And I was like, man, how cool would it be a full circle moment if FGL was on this song with Chase, because obviously he wrote Cruise. And Corey was like, oh man, that'd be awesome. And that was it. I was just kind of like, you know, it's like a daydream thought of like, it'd be dope if this was his single and FGL was on it, you know? That was it though. Like that was like a year before it even like, they even, the possibility of that happening was even a thing. So fast forward, you know, during pandemic, because that was December, right before the world shut down. So world shuts down in March. This is 4 months before. World shuts down and, you know, they're working on his next single. And then I remember I was at my manager's office at the time. Nobody was in the building. I would go up there by myself during pandemic because literally nobody was in the building. And I would just work on stuff to get out of the house, you know. And I remember getting a FaceTime from Corey and Chase, and they had just got done recording the vocals for this song, like the master. And they were like, check this out. And I'm sitting there at this piano working on something, and I'm like FaceTiming with them. And the second verse comes in, and I was like, well, that's not Chase's voice. And it's Tyler singing. And I was just like, wait, what? I didn't know. You know, I was like, that's FGL. And that was a really cool moment. I'll never forget it. And I hung up that phone call and I called my business manager to tell her that we're going to be okay, because the bus story I was going to tell you ties into that, because I was told I should not take a bus out on that trip because as an opener, you're not making
so
enough
expensive,
money.
So expensive, yeah.
You're not making enough money to have a bus. I was losing money having a bus out, but I knew if I had a bus out, I could have Corey out to set up a studio in our back lounge. And Chase would want to come right on the bus, not on his, we're not set up in a green room. I knew that he would want to do that. And it just made all the sense. I was like, you know what? This is an investment. I'm doing it. So I was told not to do it and I was going to lose money. I was like, fine, I'll take the L. It's not going to happen if we don't. Fast forward a year, when I was sitting there at that piano, I called my business manager and I said, hey, that day, that weekend of those two shows, you told me not to take a bus. I just got the next single for Chase, and it's going to be featuring FGL, And I think that investment's going to pay off from that.
That is so smart. So when you're texting Chase, you go, hey, I got the game on. You're like, Chase, I need to pay for this bus. You don't understand, dude. I need you to get your butt over here or else I'm done. I'm going to be finished. My business manager is going to drop me. You were like, I need you in this bus. Yeah.
I was like, you don't get it. You don't literally losing money it. As we sit here.
Oh, my God.
Got to bet on yourself is the moral of the story. You have to bet on yourself.
You have to bet on yourself.
Yeah.
Cale Dodds in the studio.
We're here.
New music coming soon?
Yeah. I've got three or four masters in the can. I'm working on more. I've released three since May. Yeah, man, I'm just writing a lot with and for other people right now, and that's kind of the season I'm in, and it's great. And I'm earmarking some songs for myself that I'm working on. I've got a little bit of a rollout plan for 2025. Going to continue to do that. I've got a couple more singles coming out with some other artists I'm excited about. A couple film and TV things that I'm excited about and working on as well. It's been good, man. Excited for what 2025 is going to bring. It's a good time.
When are you going to get married, dude? You've been engaged forever.
Not that long.
How long has it been?
2 years.
I feel like I know people who have gotten engaged and married in the window that you've gotten
this
engaged.
This is true.
And,
we've been lapped a couple times. That's okay.
What are we waiting for?
We just got a wedding planner, so we're picking a destination.
You just got a wedding planner?
Well, we thought we could do it on our own, which we can, but then we're like, all right, this is a lot. We need...
Where are you going to do it?
We think we're going to do a beach. We're both beach people. We just love a beach. So probably somewhere in Florida. So
everyone's going to have to go to Florida. All your friends and family are
in
Nashville.
Who doesn't want to go to Florida?
I don't spend that much time in Florida. I couldn't even tell you much about Florida.
All right, I'll scratch your name off the list then.
There's no way.
Nope, you just said it.
There's
You're
no
out.
Way I was ever going to be invited.
Send a text right now.
I know.
Take Zach plus one
there's
off.
There's no. Oh, I got plus one, too. There's no way I was getting invited to this wedding. There's no way. If I did get invited, I'd be there. But there's no way.
We should do a podcast before I walk down the aisle.
Is Jimmy Pemberton invited to the wedding?
He's now taking your spot since you just took yourself off.
That's fine. He can go. He could be my plus one.
He's going to be officiating.
This is going to be a great wedding. Who's going to officiate? Because you officiate. We have a mutual friend, Jeremy Gold.
We do.
Who was your manager? Is your manager? Do you guys still work together?
We still work on some stuff together.
Yeah.
But not technically my
manager. You guys are still great friends. You officiated his wedding. Or you didn't officiate it.
I didn't officiate it. I hosted it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a time. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That was great. You're the perfect guy to do that.
Thank you. I think I prepared
more for
Jeremy
that. I don't know if would be as good returning the favor.
I think he would crush it.
Oh, my God. Is he going to be the host, or we don't know yet?
I'm asking
you to commit to a lot of things on
you
air,
are.
On air
this
here.
This is it.
I've
made more life decisions in the past 5 minutes than I have in the past 5 months.
Arguably, yes. Cale Dodds on the podcast. What have we left out? What's been unsaid? What have we not covered?
Man, I don't know.
Do not leave this and go, oh my God, we should have talked about this or we should have plugged that. Cale is out every day writing songs. He's writing with other artists. He's writing for himself.
You were asking me, we were talking about like 90s rock stuff earlier, and I was going to save this for the pod, but we were talking about just kind of like that 90s era of rock, which this is more of a 90s country era of rock, but it ties into the Scotty McCreery song that just came out.
Oh, yeah.
A song called Can't Pass the Bar. And he was almost done with his record. And I remember I was writing with Brent Anderson that day. And I was like, okay, but what does Scotty need? Like, if the record's pretty much done and he's going to cut one more song, what does he need? Like, what does he want, you know? And basically went in and talked to Frank, who produces him as well. And
Frank Rogers.
And shout out Frank, the Spirit Crew. Frank said that, he's like, man, Scotty loves, like, if we could do like a TROUBLE, or if, like, you know, Be My Baby Tonight, like that kind of like feel.
Like the Ronettes? Like that's like.
Like the Travis Tritt. Like
Not Be My.
No.
Not that.
Not that one. Man, what a recall though. What a pull. But we basically put on these songs and was like, all right, what's the common theme, the common like thread between these songs? And it was like basically this tempo and this feel, and it's kind of like this blues rock chord progression. And Brent had this hook, which was great. And it's like a rapid fire lyric, like a very much like a shotgun approach, like a barn burner country 90s song. And we wrote a verse and a chorus, and took it to Frank and Scotty and finished it. And man, it's like, it's one of my favorite songs. I had to learn how to play it though, because there's so many lyrics. And that's why Scotty had it at the beginning of his set, because it takes so much, such a breather. By the end of it, you're like sweating. It's like you did a Peloton class. But that's why I had it at the beginning of his set, because like, man, I had to get all those lyrics and give it all the energy I had at the beginning. But it was cool, because that was a fun moment where we, like, what does he want? What's he looking for? What are a couple songs that he likes that he wishes he had that version of?
That is how you find the most success, right? Isn't the rest of the time you're just wasting time? Shouldn't you only be writing songs with such intentional purposes? Like, listen,
yeah,
we're not going to write a song unless Chase comes on the bus right now, okay? Or maybe we will, but like, what's the point?
Yeah.
I'm not going to write a song. I mean, you're out there writing every single day.
Yeah.
But the point is, you have to be intentional, right?
For sure.
That's the secret.
Well, my whole thing is like, how can you hit a target you can't see? You know what I mean? Like, how can you throw a dart at a target that you can't see? And I'm not saying it can't be done, because clearly it can. You can close your eyes and hit a target. But like, if you tell me like, hey, he would love a Be My Baby Tonight, or, you know, like the Don Lewis single I just had, Liquor Talking. He came in with this like, I had like four other ideas I thought were perfect for him. When she was like, man, those are great, but I really want this thing that's kind of like, and it had this kind of like Zoot Suit Riot thing to it, but like his version, which he sings with this like swag and this like confidence, like this like baritone country voice. I was like, all right, that's not at all what I was expecting to do today, but you feel like you need this kind of thing. What can I do as a writer to help keep this train on the tracks of what I feel like is the most you version of like a hitty country song? And so with Kip Williams manning the ship as well as a producer, we just helped Don like really see that vision through. But like, he came in with that like feel, that like swing kind of feel, like minory thing to it. And and man that was like the title of his album, and it was one of his most streamed songs. And I credit him for having that vision though. But again, to your point, we weren't just throwing a dart into the darkness. It was like, no, we see what he wants to do. Let's help shape that. And as a writer who's also an artist, my job that day was to put on the writer hat and go, what does he want? What does he need? Let's help shape that, you know? So I'm with you. To your point, I love being able to have a little bit more of a narrow path for what we're trying to do. And that sounds counterintuitive, but it's that saying, freedom kills creativity. It's like if I give you a piece of paper and say, you have 5 minutes to write me an essay on, or a 12-page essay. You're like, on what? You're like, I don't know, go. But if I say, hey, you have 5 minutes to write me a 12-page essay on what you know about guitars and your favorite guitar and when you started playing, you're going to start writing immediately. Regardless of how good it is, you know what
yes.
to do, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
So there's something to be said about it. I definitely love just being creative and throwing stuff out and figuring out a jumping point and maybe saving a hook for something. But man, when you have like a direction, it's just, it, I feel like it works most times, you know?
Kale Don's dropping some songwriter wisdom in the Chase studio. He's everywhere. Hey. A lot of this music that we've discussed is on Spotify. So you can check this out. Kale Don's is all over Spotify with music, but some of his cuts are all over Spotify. All of the cuts are on Spotify. Pretty much all music that is released is on Spotify. Fun fact. You can find him in Nashville.
Yes.
If you're a new writer moving to town, you can dream about writing with Kale Don's.
Super kind.
And you can put him on your list as potential collaborators to strive for.
Set your bar higher, kids.
And when you finally get in the room with him, it'll be monumental. And it'll be very meaningful. Yeah, well, he's pointing at me. What?
I have a gift for you before you.
No, you don't.
I felt like you were about to close things out. Were you?
I'm in the process of closing.
I don't want to interrupt you though. But
I'm done. That's all I have to say.
But before you do that,
you
I
really
have
brought
a gift.
Me something. What'd you bring?
You're gonna think this is random. But
no one's ever given me a gift ever.
I was hoping you'd say that.
No one's ever given me a gift.
Not even on Christmas.
No. I'm just talking about. Oh, podcasts.
Okay, gotcha.
What do you have here?
So I don't know if you remember this, but a few months ago, it was probably a year ago at this point, I saw you. And you were like, dude, do you want to go to the Nickelback show tomorrow night at Bridgestone?
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, I absolutely do. But I couldn't go. And I didn't know I couldn't go at the time. I was talking. He's like, let me just check with Candace. We had plans we couldn't get out of, whatever. But I couldn't go, and I really wanted to go. But you just asked me to go randomly. I thought it was so kind. And fast forward like 6 months, I see Nickelback doing the Crossroads with Hardy.
I think I saw you there. Did I see you there?
Okay, so it wasn't the
post-show.
That's
where we had that conversation.
I told you I wasn't lying.
I'm glad we figured this out.
Come on, make that edit.
Yeah.
But this pick right here.
Are you serious?
Chad Kroeger.
Wait.
Played with that pick that night.
Do you have two of these? Why are you giving this one to me?
Because I do have two.
Wait.
But that one.
Insane.
That one he used that night of the Crossroads show.
Wait, you know what's so interesting about this? First of all, if you can get a shot of that, it's a weird shape.
It is. Yeah, it blew my mind.
Wouldn't think you would play with a pick like this.
Blew my mind.
That is unbelievable.
Now, this one is not going to go for as much on eBay, but this is, I know you're a hell of a guitar player, so that's just one of mine. It's under your computer.
It's under the computer. Wait, but this one I could actually play. Because this is, it's right here. Because this is the shape. I like where this is going.
There it is.
See if we can get that on camera.
It's just a.
It's not going to be focused on
those there. Those were my picks during the I like where this is going
tour. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I like where this is going.
And only in Nashville, you have a guy hosting an incredible podcast that's, a better guitar player than most people you write with every day. So
I don't know about that, but is there any better feeling than throwing guitar picks out into an audience?
No, especially when you just nail someone right in the forehead that wasn't expecting it.
I did that all the time. I had these great moments when the last time I was on tour, there was a part in the set where I'd come forward and give a guitar pick usually a kid who's like
right.
against the railing.
What's better than that?
Oh, dude, unreal. And it's weird because, you know what? It enhances the show.
Yeah.
Because the crowd loves to see that kind of thing. I don't know why.
Oh, for sure.
But it's like a moment in the show. Like, when I would do that, the entire crowd would erupt.
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird thing. But so I would do that, and then most of the time I would just bend down, there'd usually be a kid in the front row.
Yeah.
So one night, I'm going to make this move, and there's no kid. So I just go, I'll just throw it into the audience. So I throw it. Amazing throw. It's hard to throw guitar picks.
You got to get it down. It's like a ninja star.
It's almost like a flick, and you need to get spinning like a frisbee. So I throw it into the audience. It hits some dude like smack in the face.
Yes.
The lead singer in the middle of the song starts cracking up because he just can't believe what just happened. So we're goofing about this, and I go, I'm going to work. It's like, it's never going to happen again. Sorry, boss. It's never going to happen again. I swear to God, the next night.
He was like, do it again.
The next night. Same thing. There's no kid in the front row. I'm just going to like rip this thing in the crowd. Another incredible toss. Second night, it just rips some guy in the face. And then for the second night in a row, he dies laughing on stage, like in the worst way possible.
And now it's a part of the show.
Now I try to bring thicker picks. This Nickelback pick might actually be a good one to really
here's one for you. Anytime you ever have a heckler.
Yeah. What's the tip with hecklers?
You go up to them, and you lick the pick, and you stick it on their forehead.
Only if they're in the front row, though, that only works.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and if they're too far away, you just absolutely just dart them, ninja star them.
Who's heckling you at shows, though?
It's always the drunk guy. I mean, you don't get a lot of hecklers, but when you do get them, you got to know what to do. It's usually just the drunk guy who's looking for attention, who's not even there for anybody. Someone drug him to the show.
You've played, you would always play, what's the bar in Ohio that's the big country bar that everyone always plays?
You talking about in Miami of Ohio or Rootstown?
No. What's
the Dusty Armadillo? Is that
maybe
that one?
No, what's the one? Is it not in Ohio?
No. What's the one? Brick Street?
Brick Street.
Oh, man, that place is fantastic.
You've played Brick Street a bunch, right? When you were coming up?
Three or four times. That place is awesome. They have like a built-in, like diehard country music fan base. They love up and coming. Like, it's really cool. What that guy has done there with that whole place is fantastic.
I've played there one time.
Oh, okay.
It was a blast.
It's the greatest, right?
Yeah. We did that. I played with Temecula Road.
Yeah.
Which didn't really have a ton of fans at the time, especially in that market.
Right.
And we showed up and the place was packed.
And they knew every word and like all the things. Like, it's like a, again, they like, I love that because they research like who's coming.
Yeah.
And like, let's check them out.
Yeah.
And then they come, you know?
No, that's,
it's really cool.
That's a big deal. Cale Dodds on the podcast. Cale and I are going to be starting a band pretty soon.
We need a band name.
He's going to be the lead singer and front man.
And you're going to ninja star picks at people
I'm
solo.
I'm going to play guitar. And
talk in between songs.
And talk in between songs. Cale can talk too, though. That's what we've learned today. We've learned that Cale can talk as well. He doesn't need me. I would bring no value into this band. that we're about to start, other than just, you know, steal his musicality.
Dude, thank you so much for having me on this. It's been a long time coming, and I've been this. It's rare that I'm on a podcast that I listen to often, and you've done such a great job with this. So this is cool,
dude. I'm pumped to have you here. One of my OG friends in Nashville.
Yeah,
Kale Dodds, top first 10 people I ever met in Nashville.
Through
easily.
Jeremy and Jimmy, right?
Through Jeremy and Jimmy.
Yeah,
top 10 first within the first 10 people I ever knew in Nashville. I think you're on that list.
I love that.
And now I'm at 12.
It's only gotten better from there.
People,
it's 12 or 13.
I think I met a couple people after, and that was it. Kale Dodds, wrapping it up. Thanks for coming in, baby.
Thank you for having me.
See you soon.
Sounds good.
Wrap it.